I think it's going to happen way faster because AI is show, don't tell. And it's an operational 10Xer versus a cost center. You know, it's still a cost, but it's much easier. Hey, you know, this thing that's been taking your employees, whatever, 3 days to do, here with AI, they can do it in 20 minutes. Like, who's going to say no to that? So I think the explosion with MSPs is going to happen way faster than anyone's ready for.
Welcome to Evolved Radio, where we explore the evolution of business and technology. I'm your host, Todd Kane. This episode is brought to you by Evolved Management Training Courses, a whole series of courses built specifically for your MSP training needs. There's a Project Management for MSPs course, an MSP Service Manager Bootcamp, MSP Security Fundamentals, and an IT Documentation Done Right course. Check out the full suite of courses at training.evolvedmgmt.com or look for a link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Evolved Radio podcast. Today, we're diving into the groundbreaking and revolutionary world of AI. My guest today is Jimmy Hatzell, a man who's not just fascinated by the capabilities of AI, but also turned his fascination into an MSP-focused AI startup. Together, we're going to explore the ins and outs of the AI in the managed service provider world. Jimmy and I reflect on how the ecosystem has advanced in such a short period of time. We nerd out a bit on the underlying technology behind generative AI and how it's prompting millions of users and companies to latch onto the LLM bandwagon. Jimmy takes us through his personal journey with AI, from a eureka moment with his father-in-law to starting his own company, focusing on how small businesses can maximize their leverage on AI. We look at the breathtaking pace of technological evolution versus the sluggish crawl of regulation and guess what the future holds. Will MSPs manage LLM infrastructure? Will we see a return to on-premises solutions? Stick around for our predictions and a deep dive into this world. Jimmy, welcome to the Evolved Radio podcast.
Thanks for having me on. So happy to be here. Appreciate it.
Awesome. This is going to be great. I think we'll just sort of jump right into it. I think an interesting place to start is just a reflection on the sort of modern version of LLMs and AI. I mean, AI has kind of existed forever in a lot of ways. Like, I remember very early on my computer days, the Sound Blaster sound card that I got came with like the Parrot AI. It was like a psychologist that you could talk to and it would repeat your questions and ask you how you feel about that. Sort of like what I imagine is sort of the very first iterations of this. But like the very modern version of the LLMs that are really revolutionizing everything right now have only kind of existed for about 2 years, which I find kind of mind-blowing because of all the things they're impacting. So any thoughts on sort of like the sort of first 2 year stage and how things are sort of progressing so quickly, just to open up?
No, I remember the first time I used ChatGPT was like using the internet for the first time or high-speed internet for the first time or something like that. Like it was just, oh, this is going to change everything we do. And sitting back and watching it like magic, like I couldn't believe that it was doing what it was doing and it could talk like a person and it could answer things really quickly. And, you know, seeing that definitely opened my eyes to the future. And here I am. You know, less than 2 years later, starting a company centered around the thesis that like this is the going to change all areas of business and people need help to do it. But I mean, I can't believe that it's only been around this long either. Like, it's funny, working in AI, I've been, you know, publicly had this AI company for about a month now, and you go to technically implement something and by the time you're done, some new version of it is out and had you started it a month later, you would have done it a different way. And that's how fast things are moving in this space. And it's just incredible. It's I'm so grateful to be a part of it because it's so fun.
Yeah, it is wild how quickly things are changing. I did want to ask you, like what was sort of the moment in time? Like, do you remember sort of a particular point or moment or evening where you're like, you know what, I'm going to start my own AI company. What was that moment? Do you remember?
You know, I don't know that there's a particular moment, but there is definitely a number of interactions that I could remember where I would show AI to people and I would see their reactions. So for example, I worked in cybersecurity and I did a lot of demos of using AI to hack people. And the laughs that I would get, the inquisitiveness that I would get, the questions that I would get, people stopping me afterwards, and then became a hobby and just showing my friends. I guess one moment where it was like, yes, I'm definitely going to start a company on this was I build a proof of concept and I built a proof of concept and I had my father-in-law test it. My father-in-law is in his 70s and he is the executive secretary for his mosque. And he was doing a fundraising campaign and there was a group of people who raised their hand saying that they would donate to something, but he had to, you know, send follow-up communication to actually get them to mail the check or whatever it was. And I gave him a proof of concept of early hats before it was hats. And, you know, I told him, why don't you try using it on this? And then he called me 2 days later and said, Jimmy, what's that website that you gave me that your AI? I used it yesterday and it wrote me this really great email. I sent it out to everyone. Yeah, I want to use it again. I want to give it to everyone else on the team here. And I was like, whoa. This is a man who doesn't like use two computer screens. He uses two separate computers to like anytime he needs like his tech set up, like someone remotes into his computer and sets it up. And he figured out how to use this thing in like a number of minutes and immediately into production, like saw the life changing or the way it would just completely change, you know, his nonprofit, like the business. And that was like, okay, this is going to have really lasting change. And I think that was definitely a big catalyst for me to take the jump and go full time at it.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. Just quickly on that, like it is wild sort of the adoption of this. Like I can't remember the stat, you may know this, but like ChatGPT's like acceleration to what was it? A million users or something like that is sort of this benchmark that they've used for like adoption, you know, Facebook, Instagram, where all these sort of meteoric rises and then absolutely eclipsed by ChatGPT adoption. Do you remember that stat?
I think it was 1 million users in 2 months or something like that. And then 100 million users soon afterwards. So they did it in it's in order of magnitude each time faster than it happened, like each time that it happened. And it was like 2 months or something where the previous was like, you know, 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so wild. Okay. So I guess that leads well to sort of the other thing I wanted to sort of dig into here is like LLMs are all over the place, right? You know, obviously everyone knows ChatGPT, Microsoft Copilot is now kind of like rising up. And now, you know, Google was caught a bit flat-footed, largely I understand because of sort of their concern around safety and rollout. So like these tools existed, they just hadn't made them public. Some people argue as to whether or not they felt it might cannibalize the search business. I think there's probably some validity to that. So they've got now Gemini rolling out. And then there's, you know, Meta's developing their own internal. There's lots of even open source LLMs. So I understand you are sort of like building kind of your own model. And I'm interested in that. Like why your own model versus just sort of leveraging off the existing LLMs that are out there?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Actually, what we're doing is we're empowering users to tune or customize their own models. So we aren't necessarily interested in creating our own model. Maybe we will in the future, but we aren't beholden to one model. So every model that you mentioned, Gemini, Llama 2, which is Facebook's open source model, GPT 3.5, GPT-4, even Claude by Anthropic, we're using internally. And so there's different ways that you can customize each of these models to do what you need to do, whether that be through context or through RAG or actually tuning the models. And we're in the business of helping small businesses do that through their MSP.
I see. Okay. So I misunderstood this. It's not that you built your own model. It's kind of like a department store, maybe, for different models for different purposes. Is that a good analogy?
Sort of. It's like there's a lot of work that goes into the customization, rollout, and access to data of actually using a model at scale inside your own business or efficiently, whether that be business process efficient or cost efficient or both. And we're a platform that helps you manage all of that end to end.
Okay. With that, like maybe getting into some of the technical details, but if you do training on one of your models and you're doing something in sort of this space, but you're using a different model for something else, are you able to sort of port some of that over through your guys' platform? Is that some of the benefit there?
Yeah. So you can do that in a couple different ways. You can change the context. So you can move, say you write a really good prompt, or you have an application that's built around specific prompts that you've built inside of our UI. So in our system, we basically have a UI for prompt engineering for MSPs, and they can publish apps for their end users. You can switch out the underlying models very easily in doing it that way. The only limitation is the context window. So for example, like Claude has a 100K token context window. A token's like a syllable. So you can think of it as, you know, whatever, 25,000 words or something, like a very, very long context window. Where GPT 3.5, you know, a lot of those was 16K or 32K tokens. So, you know, 1/4 the size. So that would be one limitation of it. Another, something that we're doing in the future is retrieval. So it's RAG, where basically the LLM can look inside of a database or some sort of data set and then spit out factual information or reference that information. Those are interchangeable as well, where you just have to have the vector database configured properly. The instance where you can't is actually tuning. So the difference between training and tuning a model, basically OpenAI and, you know, Meta, these developers of these foundational large language models, they get all this training data in and they, you know, publish the model. And then afterwards, when you feed it additional information, that's generally called tuning. That's very expensive to do and expensive to run because you're not using the base foundational model anymore. That could be on a shared server or shared resource or something like that, or even if it's read only. So that gets, you know, you're paying GPU like processing power to actually tune it, and then you're paying for access to it as well, whether that be through our platform or another. So in those three scenarios, outside of tuning, you can generally switch the underlying foundational model. And that's very important because say you are an MSP and you do tons of work creating an amazing data set on how to run an MSP business, or perhaps one of your customers is in the widget factory business and they come up with a huge, a phenomenal data set or a set of prompts or whatever it is on how to create, you know, build widgets in the widget factory. When a new foundational model comes out, if you invested everything in tuning, you have to pay all of that money again to retune the data set. So, you know, you say you're doing it on Llama 2, then Llama 3 comes out, Llama 4. Whereas with RAG or with, you know, cleverly using context windows, you don't have to do that. So there's a lot of trade-offs between speed, efficiency, cost, complexity, future-proofing, and just using LLMs internally. And I think there's a lot of like misunderstanding on exactly how to do all that. But I think MSPs are going to be in that business very soon.
Yeah, apparently, right? Just for clarification, you mentioned RAG. I'm not familiar with the terminology there. What does that refer to?
I believe the acronym is Retrieval Augmented Generation. So a foundational model would be something like GPT-4. So you can use GPT-4 RAG, and that is a version of the model that's able to look inside of a database. So say you had all of your SOPs stored in a database somewhere, GPT-4 RAG could go and say, instead, you say, hey, how do I restart this Datto server or whatever? It could just make something up based on its foundational knowledge. And you know, probably 80% of the time it would be right because it's pretty good. Like GPT-4 is pretty good. But with RAG, it could actually look inside of a database and bring back a PDF user manual and say, based on, you know, page 6 of, you know, this latest user manual, the way that you restart the server is XYZ or XYZ in your scenario, in your case.
Depending on geographic context, yes.
Depending on, yes, exactly. So that's like, say you could get like 80% accuracy on complex tasks with just foundational models. Like they're pretty good. You'd probably get closer to like 90, 92% accuracy with RAG, and you'd get similar results for tuning, for tuned models, maybe even worse results in some cases. Some of the studies I'm seeing that you're actually getting better results from RAG because it's, you know, can be more factual. So, you know, there's technical trade-offs between them all.
Okay, that's cool. I appreciate the background on that. It gets into some of the use case context that I want to get into as well. I do want to call out, like, I have this conversation with anyone whenever I'm talking about AI, because to me, it's sort of like what I find the most fascinating about this technology is, like, I kind of relate it to, like, it's a bit of a parlor trick. Like, if you really understand how it works, like, once I started digging into this and understanding that technology, I was really blown away by by sort of how it actually works under the covers. So I'm not exactly an AI expert, so I'll go through this and then you can kind of correct me if I get anything wrong here. But my brother reached out to me and he's like, hey, do you know much about sort of ChatGPT and all this stuff coming out? And I was like, yeah, like it's pretty amazing. And I can't remember how we got into this, but I sort of started telling him like, this is kind of how it works. Like it's actually more fascinating. The way I describe this is like, usually if you find out how a magic trick works, it kind of takes away the magic. You're like, oh, well, okay. Well, it doesn't feel quite so special. Like I don't want to know how the magic trick is done. I enjoy the magic. And this is sort of this exception to that rule of my mind of like what ChatGPT and LLMs do is amazing. Like it's magical in a lot of ways, but it's more magical if you understand how it actually works in that it's not smart at all. It's purely a prediction engine and it's really, really good at just sort of guessing what's next in a sequence based on sort of those tokens of like word groups and stuff, right? So it's like this new numerical valuation that it sort of figures out on the fly, right? And I've done some prompts and stuff like that where I've actually sort of broken it open and it gives you the VB script window where it starts actually generating, or like it's not just the typewriter text where it actually starts like filling in text and replacing text and going all crazy as it sort of does this sort of multi-line prediction. So I find this really mind-blowing if you understand like it doesn't understand what it's actually replying in a lot of ways, like the contextual awareness. It's really just sort of number sequencing based on these groups or like numbers assigned to words, which to me, like I said, is actually kind of more incredible that it's actually able to do what it's do without being intelligent at all, right? Like, do I mostly understand that correctly? And are you as fascinated by how that works as me?
No, you do. You are. And so... it's even like, so ChatGPT is a chat implementation of a text completion. So what it actually is every time there's a question and response, it's just a longer set of text completion being set in. So there's a system prompt for ChatGPT and it's literally says, you are ChatGPT. You can do, you know, these different things. You should answer users. The question and answers follow this format, and then it's system or it's user, and then it's ChatGPT colon, right? And then the user sends the first response, and it says user colon, and then it leaves a blank spot for ChatGPT colon, and then ChatGPT fills in that text. And then it just keeps sending the same thing back over and over and over again. So like you're not, like people think of it as like, oh, I'm sending off like something and then it's, you know, listening to everything I'm doing and blah, 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 and sending it back. It's really just, you know, one, it's like a text file that just keeps getting a little bigger where it's like user response, which I mean, once I saw that, I was like, oh, really?
Yeah, it's wild. Like I said, it's just, it's crazy how it works under the covers. So yeah, getting him into the nerdy weeds, but you know, we're a technical group that generally listens to this podcast. So I'm sure people will also find this somewhat fascinating. We'll switch to a bit on the, I guess the practical use cases, right? So like you're building this specifically for MSPs. And again, like love you to just sort of expand on that. Like why a model or this platform for MSPs in particular? What did you envision as being possible with that?
So it's actually for MSPs to get in the AI business. So it's for MSPs to bring to their customers and naturally use it themselves inside their own business. The reason for that is I've seen different mega trends in the past. You look at the move to cloud, which in a lot of cases increase the cost per seat, not necessarily the total revenue, but the cost per managed user or managed device, about 50% in additional revenue through that transition. And in many cases, a move to a managed billing model or the introduction of recurring revenue. And it took a while to get there. Much because, you know, talking to someone, hey, we're going to move your server, your Exchange server out of the closet into Office 365. Like it wasn't the easiest conversation to have. There's a lot of businesses who are reluctant. This move from capital expenditure model to operational expenditure model. But, you know, MSPs were the only group of people capable of handling that transition for small businesses, while big enterprises, you know, hired large IT teams to do it internally. Similar thing happened in cybersecurity, but it happened a little bit faster. So many MSPs, again, increased their per seat revenue by about 50% over maybe 5-10 years with the introduction of more cybersecurity services. And I'm talking about changing from, I just offer, you know, a Webroot or, you know, Sophos or Pitif, like I just offer one antivirus as part of your managed package in addition to your RMM, to, you know, you're getting email protection, you're getting endpoint protection, you're getting SOC services, MFA, like the whole suite of it, all the tools and services that MSPs have been adding. Cybersecurity, hard sell, very difficult. I've been in the cybersecurity sales training business through, you know, working at Scout for a while, where, you know, you can make great cybersecurity products for small businesses, for MSPs to deliver, but you still have to help the MSPs with their biggest problem, which is actually convincing people that they actually need the damn thing. And AI is just different. So cybersecurity happened faster than movement to cloud. And I think AI is going to be a similar scenario where small businesses are going to need help. They're all going to need to integrate AI into their business, whether it's through, you know, what we see today with interactions with large language models and those use cases, which, you know, you might have been asking about, like writing job descriptions, doing SOPs, documenting things, summarizing conversations, helping with customer service workflows, lots of text heavy tasks. But I think it's going to happen way faster because AI is show, don't tell. Mm. And it's an operational 10Xer versus a cost center.
Right.
You know, it's still a cost, but it's much easier. Hey, you know, this thing that's been taking your employees, whatever, 3 days to do, here with AI, they can do it in 20 minutes. Like, who's going to say no to that? So I think the explosion with MSPs is going to happen way faster than anyone's ready for.
It's interesting. So like, I guess it's sort of dual purpose. Like there's definitely some things you can do to leverage the models internally. Like you said, like finding relevant SOPs for a particular issue, kind of, you know, co-pilot for MSP type data, but also, you know, how is that being leveraged and utilized for the client base, right? So I had a conversation with someone recently on the podcast and it had occurred to me that like, I was surprised I hadn't thought of this earlier of, I think what you're sort of starting to describe here is like the consulting opportunity around how you actually roll out, implement, and leverage AI in as an MSP in your client businesses is going to become very relevant very fast, right?
Well, I think right now, if a small business needs help writing a prompt, who can they go to for help?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, MSPs are going to get those questions eventually. And I would bet your average level one technician is better at writing a prompt than the average CFO of a $10 million small business, whatever, $5 million a year small business.
Probably safe bet. Yep. But what about leveraging AI, I suppose, in their workflow? Even some training around like Copilot, like you're rolling out 365, you know, hey, we're going to add Copilot for you guys and, you know, some training around how to utilize that. I think those are, you know, some interesting use cases, very valuable to the client as well. What about sort of like more complex integrations of language models in, you know, workflows, right? Like interactions with their clients or, you know, improvements in workflows internally. What about some of those more complex use cases? Have you thought, put some thought towards what those would look like potentially?
Yeah. So for our, what we're building at HATS and what we're releasing, I don't know, it might be out at the time of the release of this episode.
Just quickly on that, what's your release date?
The 1st of March is our first product is going out. So
perfect. Okay. So by the time this is live, this is very likely to be live. So run out and check it out.
There you go.
Yeah.
But what we have is an AI app builder where you can do all the prompt engineering work and build all the inputs into a dynamic prompt, you know, if then this type of thing, and then publish that to the end users. The end users just upload a file, press enter, or, you know, type in yes, no, maybe so. So examples are marketing, right? Marketing is an example because it's synonymous with all small businesses. And small businesses generally struggle with marketing. They don't have enough money to pay an outside firm, or they're paying an outside firm, they're not doing a great job. Say, the very least, every time you release a new product, you want to post about it on social media and you don't have anyone to write about it on social media. So you copy and paste, your MSP or someone internally builds an app that generates the social media posts, and it takes a specific input, whether that's a PDF of the product documentation that you're releasing or an email update or just a summary describing it. And they add some additional system context about the business and who it is and the tone that they like to use. And then the end user, all they're doing is copy paste. I want this to be specialized for Facebook, for Instagram, for LinkedIn. I want it to be this length. and press enter. Another use case might be for job descriptions, right? You could very easily, like that's a one-to-many example where an MSP could build an app that generates a job description where you input the title of the job, the salary, whatever the expected inputs are, and then it you know generates the whole job description for them, and the MSP could populate that to all of their different clients.
I think this is an like a less understood sort of aspect of these models is like there's often people talk about sort of future jobs are going to be prompt engineering. And like maybe that actually gets sort of like sort of born out of this and sort of becomes less prevalent than it currently is. But I don't think people really understand how different and how much better information you can get from these systems if you engineer the prompt just right, like using sort of like language variables and things like that. So maybe just a quick bit on this, like kind of your perspective, because I think a lot of people understand this is just like the ChatGPT interface. I ask some questions, I ask it to build me a job description, and it comes back with some pretty good stuff, like better than what most people would write. But the difference between that and having a really good prompt that is designed in a way that actually outputs something that is like 100 times better than what it would just generically spit out, I think is something people don't quite understand. You want to expand on that?
Yeah. So with some of the newer models, you can have a very large context window, like I said earlier. So you can provide 5 examples of good job descriptions and write-ups on them. You can provide nuances and, you know, if it's like this, then do this, and really spending time to make a very good prompt. But the thing that's changing each time is just, you know, the title and a couple words about the summary of what the job is. So we're actually releasing a course, and it should be released actually as this is released. You go to our website to get access to it on hats.ai. On how to do basic prompt engineering and the basics around it and how to do it well.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a skill that's extremely relevant. You can think about how when Google first came out, the people who could get Google right away, and a lot of those people own MSPs now, right? They could get the information that they needed, and other people would just type in the wrong thing. So it's a similar skill.
I can relate to that actually, because I used to work at an ISP way back in the day, and we used to run these open houses where I would like sort of educate people how to use the internet and how to use search engines. I used to challenge people in the room when I was doing these sessions of like, name something. I can find relevant information somewhere. And they're like, oh, okay, whatever. Like how to build a box for ferrets. And I'm like, all right, here you go. Like, and it would spit it up. Like who's the lead for this year's F1? I'm like, oh, easy. Here you go. Right. And like people were kind of blown away by this because they couldn't find that information, they'd really struggle. And it was sort of, you're right, like that's early prompt engineering is a good Google search. Like maybe it's, again, less prevalent now, but yeah, that's I think an interesting analogy. I guess like one of the other sort of elephants around this is data security, right? I think is a really important aspect of this. And I'm curious sort of how you guys are considering this in the product that you're building, because, you know, MSPs hold a lot of sensitive data, and they're, you know, I think there's another one of those things that people don't quite understand about these models is if you're using just sort of like free version of ChatGPT, you're potentially providing information to be fed back into the training model. Like it's not, this stuff is not as sort of private as maybe people assume it would be. So like, what are your thoughts about your product, how you're building it for sensitivity and care around potentially sensitive data that MSPs will be holding and wanting to leverage in this, but are sort of cautious around security implications?
Yeah, I think just AI rollout as a whole, or the global AI transition, the biggest problem that we're seeing is data readiness. So for example, why not just turn on Copilot, right, on an organization? Like Microsoft makes you do a whole data readiness thing where it's like, okay, this thing's going to have access to all your PDFs like that you have in these folders. Like, did you, you know, and the concern is, right, like I'm a marketing intern and I say, how much budget should I allocate for Q2 for this program? And it says, well, the CMO's salary is, you know, this much money. And based on this, you know, spreadsheet that I found. So you need to be really careful there. I think we set this platform up to be a secure, safe alternative to sort of everything out there, where we're not trying to monetize your data. We're trying to put you in the AI business where you have very granular control. And a big part of that, and you know, it's a lot more work on our end to keep the data separate from the models. So you can very easily switch models in the future, or as you iterate or as you build. Another piece of it, I think, is just the use cases. So people are very quick to make publicly facing applications with generative AI, and that's how you get problems like the GM dealership or the Chevy dealership that, you know, like people are getting it to generate Python scripts and to sell them Teslas, and Elon Musk is screenshotting it, and then all of a sudden GM's got a big PR problem because some random, you know, Chevy dealership in I don't know where, right, like set up a chatbot on their publicly facing website. Like you need control over what users are doing, and you need unification, especially in like a customer service environment. So that's why, you know, we build things one to many, where you can control things at the MSP level or at the admin level and edit prompts as a whole. But also, you know, educating users, like, this is your first draft. You should review this before you set it publicly. Start with use cases like marketing, and maybe not, you know, entering code into your right production Linux terminal that, you know, hasn't been tested or vetted. So it's a way to do things faster and a way to do things a little better. But like, we have one product that is external facing, for example. It's a phone customer service agent that you can call, and it can take notes, transfer you, create a ticket, you know, send email, whatever. And the amount of guardrails we have to put in to, you know, end the conversation if it starts drifting, like, it's a lot. And there's like AI, large language model security is just beginning, because these tools were used internally for so long. Right. So I think that there's going to be browser plugins to prevent people from putting social security numbers or company information in a ChatGPT that pop up. Like, we got a ways to go on all this.
Yeah. No, it's part of the issue of such a fast evolving field is, like, you know, this stuff takes time and has to, the guardrails and safety has to evolve as it evolves as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, imagine that we took, you know, like, it's almost like, it's like email was not set up for security, and here we are still using the same version of it. I mean, yeah, we've improved a little bit, right?
Still evidenced by the number of phishing and, you know, user training that's still required. It's an inherently unsafe system for sure.
Yeah, like, it wasn't necessarily designed with bad actors in mind. And to some extent, I would argue that the initial large language models weren't, you know, designed with that. And now there's talk of, you know, we need a sovereign AI, like, where AI infrastructure should be regulated at the national level, where you have, you know, say the large language model and the GPUs that run them that are, you know, dictated by the federal government. And, you know, maybe the Saudi government has a different one, and things will probably go that way. And I'm not, you know, like, I'm in no position to comment. Maybe some, I don't know, like, I have an AI company, but that's about it.
You can have an opinion, right? I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I should say I'm not an expert in foreign policy and liberty, like civil liberties and copyright and all of that. But one thing I know for sure is the technology will evolve faster than the regulations.
Agreed.
So it almost doesn't matter because like, OpenAI is getting sued by the New York Times, but everybody's already using them. So who knows?
You know, like, Meta and all of the social platforms have been around for a long time. They still haven't figured out how to regulate them either, right? So yeah, I don't think they're going to be, I mean, honestly, maybe they're quicker with AI. At least they're trying to work on it, on some regulations around it. But agreement on how that's actually going to play out, I think, will be pretty messy for a little while yet. I guess that naturally leads to, you know, prediction time, right? Predictions are terrible because, you know, if you get them wrong, then people may remember. If you get them right, it'll seem obvious in hindsight. But since you've put a lot of time to this and you're passionate about the field, I'm curious about sort of how you feel AI writ large will impact and change the MSP business model for sort of in the next 5 to 10 years, I'd say.
I think in 5 to 10 years, MSPs will be managing, potentially tuning, large language models and their relevant infrastructure around them, like vector databases, for the majority of their customers. And that may be like every small business has some version of a customized large language model that they use inside their business. And the MSPs are managing the infrastructure for that. I also think that there's going to be a movement back to private cloud and on-prem for some of this stuff. And the most qualified people I know to go set up a server room or a server rack with a bunch of GPUs and virtualization and, you know, management of that and run the wires and actually make sure that the internet's fast enough to get there are MSPs. So I think there's a big opportunity on the hardware side on ongoing maintenance of it. And I also think that you'll start to see super winners in an industry pop up. So I don't know if it'll happen in MSPs, but say one of these really big MSP platforms gets really smart about organizing their data and they create, you know, this thing that everybody's been trying to sell, like the early AI people have been, you know, dreaming of this AI that solves tickets for you automatically and can do your job. Like say somebody figures that out and then starts licensing that out to all the other MSPs and they're no longer in the MSP business anymore, right? They sell all that off. They're just in the data business and own the data set that, you know, can solve tickets. Like that stuff's going to happen in every industry, I think.
Yeah, I think it'll be wild to sort of see, like, there's sort of like some of these things I think are somewhat predictable. And then there's going to be absolute wild cards that in like 3 to 5 years, especially, we're like, oh, interesting. Did not see that coming, right? So yeah, it'll be a fun space to watch for sure. Awesome. Well, this has been great, Jimmy. Appreciate your time and best of luck with this. I think it'll be really fascinating to see how this evolves and really happy to see you in particular as one of the people sort of at the head of the spear for the MSP industry and in evolving the AI workload for them.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Really enjoyed the conversation today.
All right. Take care.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.